0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until 3 o'clock. And we've been hearing today from Ukrainian citizens who are now in Ireland, some of whom have been invited to Leinster House on Wednesday to listen to their president address the joint Houses of the Oireachtas. And some of whom are quite shocked to hear that the Russian ambassador, Yuri Filatov, has also been invited to Leinster House on Wednesday for that address. It was, in some cases, the very first they heard of it when we were in contact with them. And they really can't believe that they're going to have to share a space with Mr. Filatov in these circumstances, particularly in the wake of those scenes that we have seen coming from Ukraine overnight, those horrific, horrific scenes from Bucha of those bodies strewn around suburban streets. And as I say, horrific stories that are coming with them of what has been done to men and women and children in those areas by Russian soldiers as they take their leave from the suburbs of Kyiv. I want to, we will be hearing from them later on in the programme, but I want to go now to Zoryana first. Zoryana, good afternoon to you. Do I have Zoryana on the line? I'm hoping we can go to Zoryana. No, we might have lost Zoryana. We'll come back to Zoryana shortly. I'll bring in Michael first. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Michael, you're the director of the Ukrainian Crisis Centre here in Ireland. You are one of those who were invited to the Dáil on Wednesday.
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm one of the directors who was invited to the meeting in Leinster House this morning, learning the Russian ambassador was invited, which is kind of maybe it's because of the timing with the emerging news from Bucha, from the Kyiv region, which is recaptured by Ukrainian army. But emotions is just overwhelming. It's hard to, it's just hard to. I want to go. Don't get me wrong. I would like to wait because it's my president addressing the Irish parliament, and I know the Irish parliament was supportive to Ukrainians. We all know the actions of the Irish government, and we can all can see on the streets, in the news. And in the same time, I feel like, sharing the room, same space with the Putin, the Putin's people, it's just very hard to overcome emotionally. My initial reaction was not to go at all, but I started thinking maybe it's not the right way. Maybe we actually have to be all there, Ukrainians, maybe outside the parliament, maybe just to show how much we thankful to Ireland. Mm-hmm. And they show that we have to be like feelings have to be there, but in the same time it just every Ukrainian today, I'm reading a lot of people who's in Ukraine now, they trying to overcome with what they see. We know what was going on. Yeah. We knew everything, but you can't be mentally prepared for those scenes,
I know, and I understand that, even the horrific scenes that we are all seeing on our social media and our mainstream media, that it's nothing to what is being shown on Ukrainian media. Would that be right?
Well, it's showing that the Ukrainians, it is social media is everywhere the same. Basically Ukrainians seeing what they see, maybe not in the main channels because it's a little bit too much, even if for the, to see too graphic. Yeah. I don't think anybody needs to describe anything anymore, what's happening in the region and what's the behavior, of the Russian army. Like, you know, it's I don't understand. Russian ambassador was invited as the part of the diplomatic processes are in place. But I don't know, do we have a moral right to invite them at all, to share this space with them, if they actively supporting what and they trying to hide out the truth and, like, you know, actually working for Russian propaganda?
Yeah, because of course that's what the Russians are saying today. They're saying that these pictures were staged, that these things did not happen, that what we're seeing with our own eyes can't be believed.
Yeah, but, like, you know, we know it's the limit to something that could be staged. I spoke yesterday to one of the ladies who recently arrived from Ukraine. She's not staging it. She's from Kharkiv. She was from Russian-speaking family. Like, you know, what Russian portrayed, they defend him. And she said, like, she was leaving her city, village outside the Kharkiv in the recent weeks, and they was afraid to put the sticker "kids" on it, like, you know, because they seen driving out of Kharkiv, they seen cars with the stickers "kids" was shot, was burned, and it's not, you know, you don't need to see any guy, you just need to talk to people, like, you know.
Yeah. So I know, and I think a lot of people will understand. When were you invited to attend this, Michael?
I think it was a couple of days ago when President Zelensky will address the Irish Parliament, and we get invitations through the Ukrainian embassy.
And were you warned at that stage that you might have to bump into Yuri Filatov there?
Yeah, you see, and then how do you control the anger when you bump to that sort of people? Like, I don't think it's only Ukrainians who are going to be outraged with seeing him there. Like, you know, I think a lot of Irish politicians, and they may not be, even if they professional, but they will be outraged. I don't think they are. I'm an Irish citizen.
Michael, were you told he was going to be there?
No, I'm sorry. Just out of this. Yeah. No, we wasn't. I only learned this morning from the Irish news, from the RTE, that we weren't aware at all.
Right. Okay.
He was invited to the meeting. But is the purpose for him to be there? I don't know. Is the President Zelensky addressing to him, trying to say thank you to the public, to the Irish government, and in the same room present the person who on completely opposite side?
Yeah.
You know, this is just...
Well, will you stay with us, please, Michael, because I've got Declan Alcock on another line, and he has a particular view on this. Declan, good afternoon.
Hi. Katie, how are you?
Good, good.
Anyway, like everybody else, we'd all be upset with... Actually, to be honest, Katie, I try to even... When the news comes on any of the channels, I actually, you know, we kind of nearly have to turn something else on. It becomes so difficult. But, and even at the weekend here, I heard the local parish priest saying about just welcoming a family here in Greg Hullan here to the parish from Ukraine. He'll go into the details, and we'll let them settle, please God. But I believe, like, okay, we're all horrified at what we see, but I would actually expose the Russian ambassador all the more.
Good afternoon, Frank.
Hello, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, you were listening to Declan there.
Well, I wasn't really, I was on hold, I couldn't hear him.
All right.
Sorry.
But
you can tell him.
Basically, sorry, Frank, I understood
okay.
You were listening to him. Declan is saying that the right thing to do here is to bring Yuri Filatov, the Russian ambassador, into Leinster House, into the Dáil, and expose him and make him answer for what has happened, what the Russians have done.
Absolutely not.
Not. Absolutely
you
not,
thing.
You're saying.
No. And I'll tell you another thing, Katie. Shame on the Irish government since the start of this, with the carrying on out of the whole lot of them, opposition parties, government that's running the country, all politicians and TDs have been an absolute disgrace. All I'm hearing is, I condemn what's going on in Russia. Condemn, condemn, condemn. How long, Katie, do we sit watching the news? Today, this morning on your Morning Ireland, there was reports of women being openly raped in front of their kids. and executed. So do we keep listening to this and watching this? I'm actually embarrassed now every time the president of the Ukraine comes on the television, Katie. I have to switch him off. I can't look him in the face. It's a disgrace.
What about Declan's statement there that it does no good to, you know, shut them out of the media, that we Declan. Should be asking them questions?
Yeah. Ask them a question, Declan. Do you think you'll get a straight answer and an honest answer?
No, I don't. But that's why we need to expose them. That's why I think, like, I'm as upset as you. About things, but I think as soon as the president finishes addressing the Dáil, I would actually stand and I would ask the ambassador from Russia to reply if he wants to. And he'll be exposed to the evil person and the evilness of Russia that they are. That's what they need to be exposed.
But Declan, Declan, can I put this to you, please? Yes. Given that, as I say, we knew he was on the 6th, that's why I referenced this. Yes. It's a very well-known clip. Yes. It's been watched literally millions of times around where David McCullough put all of this to him. This was after the invasion. This is weeks after he had told the Oireachtas Committee it wasn't happening, that he had told Sarah McInerney on primetime it wasn't happening, and it had happened, and it was put to him. And we saw his response. So the ship has sailed then, hasn't it, in terms of exposing him? What he'll do.
Yeah, and so should every other country in the world, every other democracy in the world do the same with their ambassador.
But they know what they're like, Declan. They know what they're like.
But that's what we need to expose. The Russian
what they're like, Declan.
Yes, but the Russian people don't know.
Declan, believe me, the Russian people do know what's going on. They all have mobile phones and Wi-Fi. So whatever the state is showing on the television, the propaganda, we can't control that. But people have mobile phones and smartphones. They see the videos. They see what's going on. And shame on a lot of them as well, Declan. Shame on a lot of them as well.
But I just feel some of them don't know. But I think, I do. I agree with you about a lot of them. And I'm the same, Declan, as well. I try to turn off I get upset when I see the news or...
Well, listen, there comes a time as well, Declan, and I'm sick of listening. This word now, my favourite word lately is neutrality. Mm.
I agree with you about that.
We've a warehouse full of anti-tank missiles over there that our armies play with in a field. So what are we doing with that? Instead of just standing up like the rest of them and be counted here.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I believe NATO. Yeah, I do, and I agree. I believe NATO should send troops into Ukraine.
Listen, let me tell you about your Irish government. Yeah. As always. They love to sit on the fence and watch, and they love to run with the fox and hunt with the hounds.
Is that fair, though, Frank?
I agree with you about that. I'm not defending anything like that. I want the Russian ambassador and Russia to be exposed. I want him to be asked in front of the whole world on Wednesday to reply to the president of Ukraine.
Yeah. We don't like upsetting people.
Yeah.
No, but Frank, is that fair now to be dismissing a decades-long policy of neutrality that many, many, many people would say served the country well we just don't like upsetting people?
Katie, how has it served the country well? Explain that to me.
Well, we didn't lose people in the Second World War like all our other neighbours across
Europe.
World
War, when German Luftwaffe dropped bombs in East Wall and other places by mistake, we were attacked. Did we do anything? No, De Valera went and signed the book of condolences for Adolf Hitler. So where do you draw the line there? Irish citizen was killed by the Russians there 3 weeks ago. What did we do about that?
So
we condemned it.
You don't think there was any value at all to the stance of neutrality
There's only so much I can sit now watching women, children, civilians getting slaughtered. And we're just sitting there every night watching the news, having our dinner and condemning
the Taoiseach will say, and indeed Simon Coveney, Foreign Affairs Minister, will say and will explain that we may not be militarily aligned on any side in this, but that we are not politically neutral in this, and that they have made their views on that very clear.
Listen, Katie, safety in numbers. We wouldn't be alone. We'd be joining forces with the rest of Europe. It's just we're happy for their kids. We're happy for their people's kids or whatever to go and do the dirty work and sit by and watch it all.
And would you be at all worried about a nuclear war, Frank?
No. No. In actual fact, I think this will put an end to it pretty quick.
Can I can I just bring back in Michael Baskin where we started? And Michael, you know, you have a decision to make. Unlike Frank and Declan, you actually have a decision to make about whether or not you are going to walk into Leinster House on Wednesday, knowing that the Russian ambassador has been invited there.
Yes, we have the decision to make, but we have another collective decision to make, because I'm the Irish citizen as well as the Irish citizen in general, like happy to see the Russian ambassador in the Irish parliament at all. Is the democratic way of solving the situation? I don't see. I kind of agree with both gentlemen on what Declan's saying, but probably people of Putin have to be asked them questions, not in the front of Irish Parliament, maybe in the face of the juries later on. So we need to, you know, they all have the questions to be asked, and obviously. You clearly explained position of Irish government of not being neutral in political way.
Yeah.
But every, you know, I just put it in simple perspective. Every anti-rocket missile, any bulletproof vest or helmet will save just Ukrainians' lives.
Yes,
that will, that will save the Ukrainians' lives. And at least I think, like, as Ireland, as the country, can do to try to save more people.
Okay.
You know, just the humanitarian action more than anything else. Because whatever is going, we've seen this similar situation in Syria, but it was in a smaller scale in some sense, and maybe a bit farther from us, so we can't see that close what was happening in Syria, but Russian not doing this first time, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
Okay, Michael, look, we asked the Russian embassy if Mr. Filatov was planning to attend on Wednesday, but we have not got an answer from them on that.
Yeah, so, but would we expect an answer? Like,
indeed.
You know, any answer is going to be lies.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thanks, Declan. Thanks, Frank. We are going to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And now I think we have Zoriana on the line now. Zoriana, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh great. Zoriana, you, we know from your name, you're Ukrainian as well, but you've lived in Ireland for quite a number of years now.
Yeah, 16 years.
Right. But obviously, you're looking at the footage and the videos and the images coming out of Ukraine, particularly over the last 24 hours.
Yes, exactly. And also, you know, some of my family is here, but also most of my family is back there. But it's not only the family, it's that collective trauma that I'm experiencing, you know, being connected with my people, with my countrymen, with my nation. And it is absolutely transpiring in the pain in the body. You know, it's very difficult to watch, but it's even more difficult not to watch, because you need to know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly can't imagine being in your position and seeing those kind of images from my home country, and, you know, being able to do so little to help or to change what's happening. And you have connections as well, family connections in Bucha.
Yes, so my cousin moved to Bucha 10 years ago, and she lived there with her husband and her children and her husband's mom. For the past 10 years, yeah. So they were very lucky to have fled on the first day of the war, but you know, there were so many who weren't that lucky.
Yeah. And I know your cousin's oldest daughter, Oksana,
yeah.
She's with you now, Zoriana.
Yes, she is. Yes, she's with me now. Yeah.
And we know this because she's actually left us a voice message because she wasn't comfortable chatting in, because obviously English isn't her first language and she's only just arrived in Ireland. But she did want to talk about, you know, what has happened in her hometown. So I think we can listen to that voice note now.
On February 24th, I was in Bucha. It was on this day that Russian began bombing Ukrainian cities, including Antonov Airport in Hostomel, which is 3 kilometers from my home. These were horrible sounds. I live on the 7th floor and my windows overlook the same airport. At around 5 p.m. on the 24th, we heard very loud noises over our house and saw shells flying towards the airport in the window. It was very scary. We immediately started packing and left Bucha. This was probably the last chance to get out of there. Many of my friends, neighbors with children stayed in Bucha. For 2 weeks they sat in the basements of buildings without communication, without water, without food. Volunteers who provided assistance were shot dead by the Russians. My friends fled Bucha 2 weeks after the start of the war. On the way to evacuation, she saw the bodies of civilians, children on the ground. Some of them were being eaten by dogs. Green corridors created for people to live safely were also shelled. Our neighbor's car came under fire during the evacuation. One bullet got stuck in the seat where the child was sitting. It was very difficult for me yesterday when I saw hundreds of scary photos from Bucha, killed, torn people and children, raped young children and women, murdered men with their hands tied. I recognize many places in the photo, but it is very difficult to comprehend that this happened on the street of a peaceful and beautiful town which has not done anything to Russia or Russian people. Every day I go to a local news group for Bucha town and read messages where people are looking for their parents, children, friends. More than 1,000 messages today. Russian took everything from us. Hundreds of civilians were killed. Millions are forced to flee their homes. I'm very grateful to Ireland for sheltering Ukrainians and for sympathizing with the Ukrainian people. We are very grateful to you.
And that's Oksana there. I think just that her, what age is Oksana, Zoryana?
Oksana is 23.
So young to have that as part of your life story now, really, to be have your friends witness this. And how long has she, like, she got out on the first week then of the invasion? And has she been with you long?
Yes, so 4 months now. So she arrived on the 3rd of March.
And how is she?
Well, it's been a roller coaster since the arrival, you know, because it's the first it's trying to accept the situation of what is happening and then trying to settle and to process the trauma. And also, I think it's the deeper layer of trauma that transpires now. And I think for all of us as a collective, as Ukrainian people, this experience, it's not first experience of atrocities that, you know, Russians brought to Ukrainian nation. It happened through the Stalin's genocide, famines, not funds. There were 3 famines that were inflicted, 2 of them on Ukrainian people and 1 of them on all of the nations that were part of USSR. But, you know, my grandma taught us a lot, and she, excuse me, getting emotional here, she shared his stories of you know, memories when Russian communists were coming to take the wheat from people, you know, take the food to basically to bring the farming to the places in Ukraine. And she was saying that, you know, Ukrainian people never wanted to be part of USSR, so they were always fighting. And one of the memories that she could remember very clearly, she was saying that at the beginning of the Second World War, Russians brought all young men in her village in western Ukraine into the church, and they were beating them to the point that all walls were covered with blood. And, you know, those are the atrocities that were there, and this is what's happening now. So over almost a century, nothing changed. The hatred towards Ukrainian people for their freedom, for their hard work, is still there. And I would highly recommend for people, if they want to learn about how NKVD, you know, how the communists, Russian communists, treated Ukrainian people, is to read the Garden of Gethsemane by Ivan Bagriani. This is a Ukrainian writer who had written a book from his own experience of, I suppose, the tortures by the Russian executioners. Yeah. That would give the perspective of the experiences that Ukrainian people had over the centuries.
Bringing it back up to just what we've seen over the last couple of days, Zoryana, has Oksana been looking at? Does she watch it? Can she bear to watch the scenes that are coming out from Bucha now?
She was very deeply affected yesterday and today, and I think the question that kind of, you know, in all our heads, her head and ours as well, you know, it could have been them if they haven't left, you know, so it's very painful.
And does she have more family there still, or has everyone, have you got everybody out now?
Not in Bucha. So her mom and her 10-year-old brother is arriving on Thursday, and we cannot wait for them to be reunited because they haven't seen each other as well for the past month.
And where have they been? Where has that little 10-year-old boy been?
So they moved to Granny's house in the western part of Ukraine, but the sirens keep going off, and he's very traumatized. And so we said that he, you know, that they need to come over to get some type of respite and normality and some type of healing, you know.
It will be very emotional, I imagine, when they arrive this week.
I think it will be, you know, but it also will be. It will be good for us to be as a family together, to support each other, to support them more, you know, than for us. It's like being here, we feel helpless, although we're trying to do or participate in fundraisings and, you know, support all Ukrainian people who are coming to the country. But it would be really good to give them a hug and just feel that they are protected.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, because we see so many very young children arriving here with their mothers, their fathers, in many cases having to stay behind. How is it being explained, or how will you explain this, or do you think, like, I think when you're 10, you have a pretty, you know, a bit of a grasp of what's going on. You can't be kind of fobbed off with half stories.
Well, you know, from what I can observe from the stories of my friends and, you know, my immediate family, that this is the generation of children that had to grow up very suddenly, unfortunately. And that they have a very deep understanding of what is happening. you know, I know it's kind of the phrase children of four is, you know, I think we can use this phrase because they have seen more than any of us. They have heard more than any of us. And yeah, I think we don't know how it's going to affect them. But I know for sure that not one Ukrainian child will forgive of what has happened to our countrymen.
Yeah, because it just sows the seeds, doesn't it, for another generation?
Yeah.
Can I ask you, and just to take a breath, and because I know this is very difficult for you, Zoriana, I don't want to push you into places that get you more upset. Just maybe to tell people a little bit about what brought you to Ireland in the first place.
Well, I came to Ireland almost 16 years ago as an asylum seeker. I had been living in the system for 6 years.
In direct provision?
In the direct provision, yes.
And what was, can you explain why you were seeking asylum at that time?
Oh, it was my husband's political opinion and his action against the, I suppose maybe to say action for the democracy, which kind of affected him and myself, so we had to flee.
Was this, 16 years ago would have been, was this Yukashenko's time?
No, it was actually, the situation occurred in 2003, so we had to flee to one country, then to another, and then to Ireland.
And you arrived here and you ended up in direct provision.
Yes, which was very, very strange for me to hear that I was not allowed to work or study or to do anything, basically, you know. And
what did you do back at home before you left?
I had a master's degree in Slavic languages. So I, over the years, I, you know, I felt like my life was on pause and I was basically being de-skilled.
Yeah. And how long were you there? How long were you in that situation?
6 years.
Oh, it's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a very long time, and both my children were born while we were in the direct provision. And then when I left, it was very difficult to adjust to the normality of life because obviously, you know, I was very heavily institutionalized and I had to deal with a lot of after effects, which then I've learned years later that it was PTSD, but education was a way out for me, so it really helped me to understand my experience and to focus on the future, you know. So.
And now you actually work in education, you work for Maynooth University?
Yes, so I do. Yeah, I work as a community connector for College Connect, which is part of Maynooth University and other three colleges in Mand region. And the primary role of Community Connector is to support access to higher education for the underrepresented groups that are basically have been or still are marginalized by the society and that need to find their way into higher education for the betterment of their own lives of their children and for the society as a whole.
And do you love it?
I love it, yeah. I feel like it's a full circle for me because I was on that margin. You know, I was the one who needed that help. And I had to start from scratch in Ireland. No matter what education I had to go the full circle.
So, Zoriana, will you stay with us, please? I need to take a break, but I want to keep you with
Fine.
Us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zoriana.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we've been talking to Zoriana. about her time in Ireland for the last 16 years and also about those horrific images from Bucha over the weekend. Zoriana, can I ask you about that issue about the Russian ambassador and President Zelensky's address to the joint houses of the Oireachtas? What do you think? Was it right that he was invited?
Well, I've heard of it. I didn't know that Ukrainian people were invited. So I would say if the Ukrainian people weren't invited into the Dáil, that would be all right to invite the ambassador and in some way to hold him accountable. However, if the Ukrainian people are invited, I think it is a disrespect to Ukrainian people to be in the same building with the, in quotation marks, a murderer. Because I think, and actually...
Well, no, sorry, we just have to be very careful, Zoriana, yeah, because we're not suggesting that the Russian ambassador is personally responsible.
Well, not
for
personally
what you just
responsible,
said
that's why I said in quotation marks, but I think there is something about being in position and representing the country on a political level. I think there should be, and I'm not saying it about the exactly Russian ambassador, but I think the ambassadors, they have a special power. They've been in the country for a while, and I think there should be some type of accountability, because if person is lying blankly, and you confirm that today, you know, like everyone have heard it. So if the person is lying blankly, that means they are skewing the information for the country they are in, which means there should be some type of accountability.
And you don't think, as you say, that Russian or Ukrainian refugees should be asked to basically breathe the same air as Yuri Filatov in those circumstances?
No, I don't think so. I think it is a disrespect towards Ukrainian people and towards the pain that they're experiencing, you know.
Yeah, and I think I have to say I was surprised to hear from Michael there that they had not been told when they got the invitation to come to Leinster House, that they weren't told at that point. And by the way, we will also be inviting the entire diplomatic corps, including Yuri Filatov. So it could have come as quite a shock. I suppose there's a big question about whether the Russian ambassador will attend under the circumstances. As we say, we asked, we didn't get an answer.
And I think it's very important to mention today, we are talking about Bucha, and now the news are coming from Irpin, the nearby town with absolutely horrific atrocities. But also we have to remember about Mariupol. There is a hope for Mariupol if the people in power in the world could support Ukraine, and I think something can be done to save them. So Bucha happened because the world allowed it, you know. And there are more towns and cities that seized, so like Berdyansk and Melitopol, you know, we are not talking about it, but this is what exactly is happening right now there. So I think it's important also to talk about those cities and towns and those people who need the help right now so that they would not end up losing their lives.
Okay. Okay. Zoriana, will you hang on there? I've got Nick Kozlov on another line. Nick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate.
Yeah, you also were talking about those scenes, indescribable scenes from Bucha.
Yes, I haven't heard everything, but I think the lady that spoke to me, her name is Zoriana. I would agree with whatever she said, and I would take a step further. I think the Ukrainian refugee, I would put it the other way around, the Mr. Filatov doesn't have the right to be at the same city or at the same country as Ukrainian refugee that flee from Ukraine, because we only seen the way the Russian army is held in the war. They're fighting mostly against the civilian population, and they use the principles of mass raping, murdering, torturing civilians mostly at the occupied territory. And as Zoriana said, we have another city she didn't mention, is Kherson. and all the south of the country that now been occupied. Mr. Putin ordered to release 7,000 prisoners from the Crimea Peninsula and let them have ammunition and weapon and go and terrorize the civilian population in this area. I would call that a genocide of Ukrainians doing by the Russians. And I think the Mr. Filatov does not have a right to attend. And I think it should become a dishonorable thing to invite any diplomatics. They're not diplomats, they're spies. And you cannot call them diplomats. He lied to the Irish public. He lied to your government. And as Ukrainian Irish citizen, I think he should be expelled.
Yeah, I'll just say this, Nick, because I have to say it, but I'm sure Mr. Filatov would entirely deny that he's a spy. So I need to put that on the record, because we know we did expel four other diplomats from that embassy. Yeah. Recently, because there was concerns about activities there, but he remains the Russian ambassador to this country.
Okay, I withdraw that. But most of the diplomatic mission could be spies, as the number of the diplomatic mission in Russian embassy is very high for the small, beautiful island of Ireland. I think it was 33, they reduced to 29. Still, for the population of 5 million people, it's enormous numbers. If the Irish government cannot or decide not to, it should be reduced to one diplomat. I think he'll be busy enough.
Yeah, I think that point has been made many times in recent weeks. I think that we have something like 8,000 or 9,000 Russian people living in this country, and it does seem to be a very big staff to... in correspondence with that number of Russian people living here, operating out of that embassy.
Katie,
yes,
if you allow me, can I make a small announcement? Would you mind?
Go ahead.
Sorry. Ukrainian Crisis Centre are calling to all Irish people and Ukrainian new arrivals and who've been there. We're organising tomorrow on the 5th of April a protest to condemn the... mass murdering of the Russian army in Bucha and the north of Ukraine at 6 p.m. in Grafton Street. And another event at 9 in the morning on Wednesday the 6th, the President Zelensky would be addressing Irish Parliament, and we would like to support him in that from 9 o'clock to 11 at main government building. Thanks, Katie. I just want to mention that because it's important. We want the world to hear what the Russian army did, and we don't want to hide that under the mattress, because I can't find the words for what it is. I don't want to even call them animals, because animals didn't deserve to be abused. This heartless murdering of civilian people, I'm speechless to describe what we've seen, and it's useless. It's needless. But they did it in such manner, shooting at people that was fleeing when they were retrieving. There was no need of that. So as I repeated, it's a genocide of Ukrainians. That's what Mr. Putin wants. It's not the liberation. It's genocide of Ukraine. He wants to destroy Ukraine. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Nick. And I think so many people, anyone who has seen those images, will just have to feel for it's unthinkable. Anna, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Anna, I'm good. You have a view on this issue of whether or not Mr. Filatov should be in Leinster House on Wednesday?
I do. Now, I've been listening to some people from Ukraine just now saying how they would prefer that he would not be in the Dáil. But I do think that the reason he should have to be there, if he decides to accept the invitation, is that he needs to face the shame of listening to President Zelensky saying what has happened to Ukraine and what has been done to them in the name of Russia. you know, if he's not there, he gets away with it, effectively. And if he has to refuse, if he chooses to refuse the invitation, he's showing a lack of courage, really, by not coming in and facing up to what has happened. That's what I think.
Do you think it was a good idea to invite him then?
That's why I think he should be invited, yes. You know, he is the ambassador. He represents Russia. He's speaking for Russia in our country. And if he was not invited, he could then go and say, oh, well, Ireland wasn't prepared to listen to my point of view, or Ireland was disrespectful to me. We have done the professional and respectful thing by inviting him. But we've also put him in a very awkward position because he now has to turn up and face President Zelensky, and he has to listen to what has happened to Ukraine.
Zoryana's point, though, that she would be okay with that if it was just politicians that were going to be in the chamber? But the fact that Ukrainian refugees, people who have fled these actions of the Russian troops, will also be there, that she feels it's disrespectful to them.
I can see what she's saying, and I suppose they should have been let know about this. But however, I think it's going to be even more difficult for the Russian ambassador to have to face the very people who have suffered at the hands of Mr. Putin's regime. You know, it won't be comfortable for them. But it's a bit like, almost like Nuremberg, if you like. You know, you have to stand up and they have to face the victims of the repression that they have foisted upon the Ukraine, really. And it will make them, you know, it should sort of awaken some tiny glimmer of shame in the Russian ambassador. I can't see how he can go in there and not feel ashamed.
Yeah, I mean, it will be very interesting to see what how he responds to that invitation. Yeah. As I say, we have asked, we have not got a response. We'll take a break.
Okay. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Or you can text to 51551. Now I want to bring in Vladimir. Vladimir, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You have a view on whether or not Mr. Filatov should be invited on Wednesday?
I think, I have opinion that, and I think if he's brave enough and willing to visit that, I don't think he probably will go there, in fairness. I don't think he has balls to go there, you know, because, I don't know, be in the room on your own and like 100% of the people that would be against you, I don't know. I think he just stays in his embassy, in his cave, and... You know, I don't think he will go there, in fairness. So, I would be surprised if he's there, you know.
But did you have an issue with him being invited?
Invited, I don't... not really. If he can go there and listen, maybe he will change. I don't know. We don't know really what he's thinking because, you know, he says what he's been told by his chief in Ministry of... Foreign Affairs in Russia. You know, we don't really know what this man really thinks. Maybe he's against all of this. We don't really know. So maybe if he goes to this speech of the Ukrainian president and he listened to that, maybe he will be more braver than to just say, yeah, I'm against that. Like, I'm not supporting that. The problem for him, if he says that, he will be recalled straight away from the embassy back to Russia and he probably will be stripped of everything. So that's why they're all afraid to really speak out. You know, if he says that, he probably need to apply for refugee status in Ireland, you know.
Indeed.
Because he has no other way. He can't go back to Russia if he'll start saying something against their propaganda. You know, he needs to follow the line of his propaganda machine. Maybe it will, you know, he listened to the president, he sees the reaction, maybe he will change his, he will become braver, I don't know. It's hard to believe in that, but you never know. We don't really know what he thinks.
Where are you from yourself, Vladimir?
I'm from Ukraine, just 50 miles south of Kyiv. My parents live there. It's a place called Bila Tserkva.
And they're still there, are they, your parents?
Yeah, they've been there all the time, yeah. In the first few weeks, there was some bombarding going on in this town, but since for the last 3 weeks, it's been quiet compared to other parts of Ukraine. So they just live like more or less normal lives there.
And they're going to stay, are they? They have no plans to leave?
Yeah, they have no plans to go here. Yeah, I told them to come here, but they said, no, we stay. The most of the old people, in fairness, in Ukraine, they all stay in. It's only young women and children, you know, most of the old elderly, they stay in their houses and in their apartments, you know.
And what was it that you couldn't persuade them to come here, Vladimir?
They just say, that we will stay here till the very end. It's a good end or bad end, but we don't want to go. It's our motherland and we want to stay here. Why would we like to go, you know? We spend the 60, 70 years of their life there. They don't want to be pushed from there, you know.
Yeah, you must have been relieved, though, when you saw and you heard those announcements by Russia in the last week or so that they were pulling back from Kyiv.
I'm relieved that they're pulling back from this region, but I understand that it's not the end. It's only, I would say, it's the only beginning of the war, you know. They're just regrouping.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying from your parents' point of view that they were moving back from getting close to where your parents are based there.
Yeah, for me it's a relief. But, you know, I know that so many people suffering there. And, you know, we all suffered, you know, with getting all this news from Bucha yesterday, all these pictures, horrible, you know. People are in shock, in total shock, seeing all atrocities that the Russian soldiers committed there, you know. So, no, we don't feel relieved. Like, we know that this war only starting now, you know. They're going to move now into... They're moving all this army to the east of Ukraine, and they're going to push because they're waiting for this day, red day in their calendar, 9th of May, the victory day. So they want to do the parade in Moscow and show it that they occupied part of Ukraine. They need to show to their people that they want something, you know. So they will do everything they can do in the next month to occupy as much of Ukraine as they can.
I think there is a lot of worry and fear now about what's been happening inside of Mariupol.
Mariupol and other parts of Ukraine, they've been occupied by Russians. If you look at this Bucha, what happened there, I think in Mariupol and other places, it's even worse. You know, I think it's 10 times worse. There are Chechens. A lot of Chechens fighting there, and Chechens, they're famous for their barbarity and, you know, disrespect for human life. So we don't, it's awful things. If you start thinking about that, you know, you can't really sleep. It's awful, you know.
Do you have people back there still? Do you have friends or family apart from your
yeah,
parents?
Yeah, all my classmates, they're all there. Yeah. But some of them joined the Ukrainian army forces. Some of them just staying in the town, you know, because every town was preparing that they would be attacked. But some of the places, like the town where my parents are, it's not really affected so badly. So people just digging trenches there, basically, and waiting, you know, for the attack. But Russians, they overestimated their force, so they thought they will take over half of Ukraine like in 3-4 days, but now that's why they pulled out from Kyiv region, because they knew that they stuck there, they can't really move forward, or, you know, so that's why they backtracked and moved everything now to the east of Ukraine, where they will concentrate and try to grab as much land as they can.
I know a lot of people who are here, particularly able-bodied men, are feeling guilty and you know, half wish they were there to be able to do something on the ground in Ukraine. But you must be relieved as well that you were somewhere safe and watching this from a safe distance.
I was thinking the same. Like, I was, probably thinking I should be there. But at the same time, I know people who went there, and there are so many volunteers there now ready to join Ukrainian armies that they really reject you if you go to, if you like to join somebody, they will say, just go home and wait, you know, because there are so many people willing to fight. Ukrainian army doesn't really need soldiers at the moment. Ukrainian army needs a heavy weaponry, you know, like tanks and airplanes and rockets. You know, there are enough people to fight.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I think we can do something better even here, you know, spreading the world, speaking to people, telling them the truth, what's happening in Ukraine. You know, everyone can do something small, but it will help in the end for Ukrainian victory, you know.
And when you see the Russians today saying, oh, you know, don't believe what those images that are coming out of Bucha, don't, you know, they're all staged.
The Russians been saying that all the time. If you listen to the Russian news for the last 10 years, they like, Russian people, Russia is like a best country in the world. The most fairest, like never attack anyone. They're always on the right side. And everyone is wrong, like NATO is wrong, USA is wrong, Europe is wrong, but Russians are always right. So every time something happens, they always say, no, it's not us, it's them. You know, it's all staged, and, you know, so I get used to this. Just ignore what they're saying. It's a propaganda. And they mostly, they say all of this not for external audience, but for internal, for people who in Russia watch TV every day, and they've been brainwashed for like 10 years, get ready for this war, slowly and slowly. And now they, in Russia, one of your previous callers today, he said that Russian people know what happened in Ukraine. But I tell you, 60-70% of Russians don't really know. They have mobile phones, but they don't want to use the internet. They feel more comfortable just watching TV and being told that Russian army of liberators, and there are no casualties. You know, we're liberating Ukraine from the Nazis, and they like this idea, and they don't want to look at other news and see the real picture. You know, so that's why Putin has like 70% support in Russia. You know, they really support him in this war. They've been brainwashed. And they like this idea of Russia being a strong country, fighting the evil West, NATO. They have this obsession with NATO. You know, they've been saying NATO will be in Ukraine and on our borders. But NATO been on the borders of Russia for years. Like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia have been members of NATO a long time ago. And nobody says anything about this, you know. It's just excuse this. Yeah. They create these stories, horror stories for Russian people about NATO and USA, you know. And they always say, oh, look what USA did in Iraq or in Afghanistan. Yeah, I agree that USA were wrong in Iraq and Afghanistan. But doesn't mean that you can do the same. If somebody kills somebody, it doesn't mean you can follow him and kill as well because someone killed him, you know. There's no excuse of doing this in Ukraine.
Vladimir, many thanks. Many thanks. We'll talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to go now to Maria. Maria, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Maria, I know that you spoke to Joe previously about your dad, your father, and it's very recent, your loss.
Right.
Can we just remind people what happened?
Yeah, of course. So my dad, he was 76 years old. He was crossing the street in our hometown in eastern Ukraine, in Severodonetsk, on 8th of March, and he got shot basically by artillery shelling, and he got killed. We were not able to bury him because the shelling continued, and that's what happened.
So when you see those pictures from Bucha, then?
Well, that's, I think, it's probably hard to say that, but in some way, I'm glad my dad didn't have to see those pictures, because at least there is, I think, even, you know, what we've seen in Bucha, and I think what we will unfortunately see after more cities are liberated, you know, Kherson and Mariupol and other villages, when the missiles strike, they don't choose, you know, to kill people. Like, they don't choose who to kill, and there is a bit of a distance between the person launching an asylum and the victim. And it's not an excuse, but there is a qualitative difference to that. What we're seeing in Bucha is deliberate torture and absolute lack of humanity. It's something that we probably all know from the textbooks, history textbooks, from or accounts from the Second World War and the horrors of genocides. And I think that's just what's completely shattering, I think, our belief in humanity, and just, it's devastating.
And it's so devastating, I think, as well, because we had heard so often at the start of this war of Russians viewing Ukrainians as, you know, fraternally, as brothers, as sisters, you know, of there being so much in common. But clearly in these cases, they just are completely dehumanized now in terms of how these soldiers would have viewed those people in Bucha.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we have a historical case study of this, is how many people, in simple people in Nazi Germany, viewed Jews, and they, I think, because of propaganda, people truly believe that somehow Jews are, you know, different from them and don't deserve dignity in life, and I think that somehow Russian propaganda was able to instill similar beliefs about Ukrainians right now among Russians. And we see that with more and more accounts in terms of sociology, in terms of the support for the war, but also just ordinary people, the way how they comment about Ukrainians, they're mostly using derogatory words. Just normal people on the street are saying that they would like to wipe out Ukraine from the face of Earth, and they don't even comprehend that what they're saying is fascism.
Is it, though, as well, just an indication of how undisciplined this force is, how perhaps, you know, morale is not good within those troops that were sent in, many of them conscripts, many of them unaware of what was ahead of them?
I think we definitely will need to investigate this once the war is over. But from what I understand and from the credible accounts that I read, is that there was preparation for mass execution and that type of basically what Russians call cleansing. We have information that Russian forces, army, procured 45,000 body bags, and they are also invading with mobile crematorium. And this information was there, you know, in February already, and we Ukrainians didn't comprehend what it is for. They were saying, well, are they predicting so heavy losses for their own army? And now with Bucha, we understand that those body bags and mobile crematoriums, they were supposed to be used for Ukrainians. They were preparing this genocide, because Russian army is not new to this. They've done this in early 2000s in Chechnya, in Grozny, where so this is something that is not new to them, unfortunately. I don't know. Of course, we do know as well that their morale of their soldiers is low, and many of them are scared and not well equipped or trained. But we cannot excuse what is happening in Bucha, and what's probably happening in Kherson and other areas. We cannot excuse that for say that it's just basically human error or low morale. I think, unfortunately, there is a systemic effort to kill people en masse.
And just before I let you go, Maria, what do you think about the Russian ambassador and Wednesday?
Well, I think if we as civilized world, we need to use every opportunity to get Russians to listen to Ukrainians, to listen to other point of view. I don't believe it will do anything at this point, but we need to prepare for, you know, for long term through the denazification of for Russians, so that they comprehend the degree of crimes they're committing today, and that hopefully future generations will go through the similar process like Nazi Germany, Germans did after Nazi Germany, that they realized the crimes they committed, and that opened path for very different German society as we know it today. I am, even though it's very painful right now, I am hopeful that in decades there will be a path to normality for even for Russian society.
Yeah, and I'm just seeing a note coming in here that Lithuania has expelled the Russian ambassador over the Ukraine war. So that's the first because we were being told we can't be the first to expel the Russian ambassador, but now I believe that Lithuania has made that move. Maria, many thanks for joining us today, and our sympathies to you, because it's still very recent, your loss there. And can I just, before we go, ask you, Zoryana, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
I'm conscious you've got a very big week ahead of you now with your cousin and her son arriving. Are you all ready for them?
Not yet, not ready at all. I think, physically, spaces and everything, we are ready. I think emotionally, we would need to be paying attention, to what is happening and how to support them in the best way possible.
Very, very best of luck to you and to Oksana and to her brother and to her mom and to everyone out there today. It's a very, very difficult day, we know, for everyone from Ukraine. And that's all we have time for today. Ollie Hamilton was our broadcast coordinator. Ashtane Gruffrey was on sound. Annette Egan produced. Stand by now for Ray.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.